on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Time On with Sam McClure.
For Master Builders Training Victoria, short courses now available. Visit mbavtraining.com.au. RTO 3935.
9 minutes past six. Hello, happy Monday. Welcome to Time On. Sam McClure with you all the way until 7 o'clock. Big show once again for you. The AFLX squads are out. We'll give you the latest on that. Our AFLW coach Paul Groves to join us later in the show. We're going to be talking some A-League as well. But Monday is score review time. We launched it last Monday with huge success. Lots of feedback about it. And we are going again, score review Monday. And I've got a few to get off my chest. And I need you guys to help me out. 9429 1116. 0433 98 1116. Prizes, of course, for the best calls. We've got another family pass to the AFLX this Thursday at Etihad Stadium. We've also got a double pass to see the Melbourne Victory take on Korea's Ulsan in the group stage of the Champions League. That is tomorrow at Amy Park. So a couple of great prizes for our best score reviews. Remember, though, you must start your call with...
score review.
Score review. Okay, my first...
score review.
Lockie Henderson. I mentioned this off the top of KB and Doc just before 5 o'clock. Lockie Henderson has not run since December 13 when he had another arthroscopy on his right knee. He has not been training, and we are, what are we now? We are February 12. We're halfway through February, so that's the best part of 8 weeks since he's had that second bout of surgery. Now, everyone's been concentrating on Patrick Dangerfield, Joel Selwood, and of course, the returning Gary Ablett. That midfield is going to be astounding. We know that. But Lockie Henderson was specifically recruited to the Geelong Footy Club so that when Andrew Mackie and Tom Lonergan retired, they would have a centre-half back, or key position defender, rather, in the prime of his career. Now, unless something miraculous happens, he's not going to be playing round one. It's going to put a lot of strain on Harry Taylor, who goes back. It's also going to put strain on Jake Colajasny and Tom Stewart, who've played less than 70 games between them. This has gone majorly underrated down at the Kennel. That's my first score review. My second
score review.
We mentioned this on Friday. The Western Bulldogs have lost their head recruiter, Simon Dalrymple, with 2 years left on his contract and gone to a premiership rival in the Sydney Swans. We haven't heard from the Bulldogs since. Now, there's been whispers and scuttlebutt and talk that, you know, Simon Dalrymple and maybe Jason McCartney, who's also left for the Giants, didn't talk much or didn't get on. What we do know is that somewhere along the line, these two didn't get on with either each other or other senior staff. They're both gone. Now, I don't think this has received enough attention. My score review on the Western Bulldogs is that, are you concerned if you're a Western Bulldogs supporter? This is the two guys who put together a list that essentially ended one of the biggest premiership droughts in footy history, and they're both gone. That's got to put pressure on Luke Beveridge. And my final
score review.
Well, I was sitting up having my breakfast this morning at the table, listening to Jared Waitley, as I do every morning from 9 after Gary and Tim, and I could not believe what I heard.
I just think it's lost its way the last two or three years, and particularly this year. I believe they waved the white flag as far as promoting the game goes. It's just been completely overrun by a big bash.
The TV ratings from Saturday night, so City versus Sydney FC, on Foxtel it did 39,000 and on One it did 37,000. So that combines for 76,000. The women's footy, which was from Perth, which had the combination of Seven in various places and Fox, was 141,000, so almost double there.
Yeah.
And from Friday night, Victory versus Brisbane, 45,000 watched on Fox, and 53,000 were watching the AFLW. So, yeah, the inability to tell their story for the length of the season and the lack of marketing around it whilst the backroom dealings have been going on, they sort of look like the two real trigger points.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing, that an AFLW game that is two games into its second season ever, and people, by the way, going through the gates aren't even paying for the tickets, rated nearly double of City versus Sydney FC on the exact same time for a league that's been around for more than a decade. Now, I pride myself on living and breathing all sport in this town. Have I majorly dropped the ball here? It came to an absolute shock and surprise to me that the ratings were that poor for the A-League. I want to hear from soccer fans. 9429 1116, 0433 98 1116. We've got some great prizes to give away. You've got to call up and you've got to start your call with score review. Now, to talk more on the A-League, and it was a point raised brilliantly by Stephen Quartermain and Jared Waitley this morning on Waitley's show, I went to the top. I went to Daniel Garb, who's a regular here on Time On. He's a man that's at the coalface day in, day out of this game, and he's, of course, Fox Sports Soccer news hound. Garby, welcome. What do you make of my score review? Is it gone underrated that this game is struggling, or are we making too much of it?
G'day, Sammy. Oh, look, it's been a poor season in that sense. There's no denying that. Figures are down, and Jared and Quarters, you know, were accurate in the sense that the promotion needs to be better. And the FFA is accountable for that. The promotion of the league going into it and during it wasn't at a high enough standard. There was also a bit of a lull when expansion was knocked on the head last season, of course. And I think everyone's crying out for more clubs. And even if there weren't more clubs this season, you know, the blueprint or the rubber stamping of a couple new franchises would have generated some more excitement. 10 teams is not enough. The same teams play each other too much. The clubs need to be held responsible for the lack of promotion as well. But as Jared said, it's the issue behind the scenes, this saga that's been going on for too long now between the clubs and the FFA. That's a reason for that. The clubs want greater representation on the board because they want a greater return of revenues, which they don't feel is enough at the moment as it stands from the A-League. And therefore, they're saying, well, why should we put in more money into the league if we're not getting the returns we want? And while the saga's far from being resolved, we're not going to tip in more money until it is resolved. So, unfortunately, it's creating a very unwanted storm at the moment, and it's led to what has been a drop-off in numbers this season. And it's a great shame, Sammy, because you've got a team in Sydney FC that plays some wonderful football week in, week out. They are 12 points clear at the top after dominating last season and playing some sublime stuff, as they saw the Melbourne fans in their own backyard on Saturday night when they played a good team in Melbourne City off the park. And, you know, they're a team obviously not at the standard of the EPL or La Liga or the Bundesliga or Serie A or some of the other Champions League and Europa League sides. But I'm telling you, they're a team that can match it with a lot of teams around the world. Speak to Ange Postecoglou, who scouted Australian players in leagues all over the globe. Speak to the Socceroos players. They tell me all the time, outside of the top leagues, outside of the Champions League clubs, now, some of those leagues like Belgium, Holland, Norway, Denmark, top teams in the A-League can match it with plenty in those leagues.
If you just tune in,
it's a shame that it's not being promoted enough. And some of the players too, Milos Ninkovic, Leroy George in Melbourne, Ross McCormack, talking about a $15 million striker from the Championship, you know, in the backyard scoring wonderful free kicks. Why wasn't his story told enough? You know, there are players there who can be marketed in a better way to get fans to want to go and watch them in the flesh more and more and on TV. And unfortunately, I think that's been left a little bit wanting this season, and it's been a shame.
If you're just tuning into Time On, we're 17 minutes past six on this Monday evening. Sam McClure being joined by Daniel Garb, a very passionate Daniel Garb. And the calls are already starting to line up, Garby, on 94291116. Dimitri, Billy, Greg, Anthony, Ben, Sam, we'll get to you shortly. Just give us a sec, but you will have your time to shine and tell us exactly what has gone wrong with the A-League. Garby, we might even take a couple of calls. But before we do that with you, can I just ask, it's not as simple as the A-League has lost its star value in the sense of we don't have the names that we once had for people to pay good money to go and see.
It's not as simple as that. Of course, yep, we'd love a Dwight York and a Del Piero every season, yeah, and Emil Heskey and a Shinji Ono, but don't tell me you can't promote, as I said, a Ross McCormack.
Yeah, I agree.
Have a billboard hanging up on the way to the freeway saying, $20 million striker in your backyard, go and watch him play, Ross the Boss. Tell his story a bit more. Mm. Be stronger with it. This is a bloke who scored week in, week out in the Championship for years, and he was netting wonderful goals at Amy Park. But that wasn't promoted more effectively enough for mine. Thankfully, the Socceroos, through all of this, Sammy, have been wonderful. I mean, and it's not about interest in the game. It's just been, unfortunately, the A-League season has had a bit of a lull, and it can pick up. But the ratings around Socceroos games were wonderful. You're talking about 2 million eyeballs on the games against Syria and the games against Honduras, the home legs, those matches alone. You know, and all the drama around Ange Postecoglou had people talking, had people from outside football interested in what was happening with our national team, engaged in the situation. That was a positive for mine, the amount of people that became involved in that story. So they've kept things going. We've got a World Cup on the horizon, a fourth consecutive World Cup. That's not lose sight of that either, because we've come a long way in that regard. So there are many positives there, but of course the promotion of the league has got to be better, and they've got to solve this drama with the clubs and the owners in the background, which unfortunately is holding things back.
Garby, let's whip through some calls if we can. Dimitri from Beaconsfield, start us off.
Score review. I completely agree with Daniel Garb. There has been no promotion this year of the A-League, Harold. I'm a diehard Victory supporter, and if I wasn't a member, I wouldn't even know when the games are on.
Dimitri, appreciate your call. Billy on the road, welcome to Time On.
Hey, Score Review boys. Hey, look, I disagree to a certain extent. I reckon, I mean, I've followed soccer and played soccer since 1970s, and the product just isn't there. We go out and try not to lose. I went to the first Sydney game in the year, and it was boring. And blokes are going backwards. And you see the difference in class when blokes like Damien Duff and those high-profile name comes out. It doesn't matter how good you promote something, if a player hasn't got a first touch or if the product isn't worth watching, people won't go.
Garby, your thoughts on Billy's call? No, he's a passionate supporter there.
I disagree with that. I think there's wonderful players. Adrian Merzhievski playing for Sydney FC. I mean, the Polish World Cup squad are looking at him. You know, they're a Group A team in terms of feeding to the World Cup. They're looking at Adrian Merzhievski. He's played a lot for the national team. He's a wonderful player. Daniel Arvani for Melbourne City is a beautiful young footballer.
Yeah, star in the making. The yep.
Leroy George for Melbourne Victory is a wonderful talent. Look what he's done this season. Now, there is quality out there. I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I just think it needs to be promoted a lot better.
Okay, one more call before the break, and we'll get a final take from Garby. Anthony in Burwood.
Score Review, boys. Compared to its competitor, the Big Bash, I don't think football's marketed to families anywhere near as well. The Melbourne City membership, I think, is the most expensive sporting membership in Australia. So there's just not enough incentive for a family to go to the sport.
What's a membership worth, Anthony?
Well, I've got a friend who's got a family membership, and I think they pay over $1,000 a season.
Right. Garby, would that be right? $1,000 for a family for a season does seem a little steep.
I'm not sure. I can't answer in that regard. And I can understand the qualms in that sense. I think the FFA also needs to do a lot better in that sense to make it a more attractive game to go to for families with the pricing, but also with the fan situation.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, we don't want flares at games, of course, and we don't want antisocial behaviour, and we've had issues in the past. But at the same time, football's got its own special culture. Dancing and chanting and singing and jumping on the chairs and taking your shirt off and waving it over your head. That's great. That's what we love about the game of football when a goal scored. The chanting between the North End and the South End at Victory games was wonderful with 30,000 people inside Etihad or Amy Park back in the day. That's what we want to see. So the FFA's got to engage those active supporter groups more and more, because at some clubs, like the Wanderers, for example, unfortunately, there's not enough of them going anymore. Get them back. Harness them, but get them back, because it gives the game of football a point of difference from the other codes. Big Bash is a wonderful event, but it's family friendly. There's a bit more passion involved with a football game. And as a kid, I used to love going and watching the fans chant. I couldn't wait to turn 18 to go into those areas, you know, when I was old enough.
Yeah.
Places like Perth growing up. And there are so many kids who want to do that as well. But they need to be engaged better, those active supporter groups, because they set the tone.
22 minutes past six here on Time On. We will get to your calls. That is my promise. Ben, Greg, Cody, John, Phil, all hang on. We'll get to you after the break. Before that, Garby, can I just get your thoughts on Kevin Muscat? I think for the first time, well, certainly that I can remember in recent times, he's under significant pressure. Friday night, three losses in a row, and they simply don't look like it at the moment, the Melbourne Victory.
It's a very, very big story in Melbourne for mine, Sammy. You're talking about a club legend who has lost three in a row, who had his team booed at halftime, but was then booed himself when his face came on the big screen at Amy Park in about the 80th minute.
He's
out of contract at season's end, and there have hardly been negotiations that can be described as advanced in relation to Kevin Muscat that we know about. There might be things going on behind the scenes, but at the moment, it seems to be pretty stagnant in that regard. So he's running out of time in terms of a new contract being agreed at a time when his team is really struggling, and fan sentiment, clearly from the reaction on Friday night, is well and truly against him. This is a manager who's a legend of the club. This is a manager who was a licker's paint away from winning the grand final last season. James Treisi, at the death, if that goes in, instead of hitting the post, the Melbourne Victory are champions. It can turn so quickly, and it has for Kevin Muscat right now at the Melbourne Victory. It can turn the other way if he wins a few games in a row. Hopefully it starts with the Asian Champions League from his point of view tomorrow night. But you're talking about someone right now who's got the fans against him, and is out of contract at the end of the season, and his team's lost three in a row, the biggest football club in the country, without a doubt. So it's a major story developing there. Hopefully, for Kevin's point of view, he can turn it around quickly.
Yeah, we all hope so, certainly here as Melbourne Victory fans. Hey, Gabby, we appreciate your knowledge and your expertise. That's something that you always bring to the table. We also appreciate your passion.
Thank you, mate. Cheers, Gabby.
Daniel Garb there, the number one man for soccer in this country, Fox Sports Soccer Newstown. Wow, boy, haven't the phones lit up. We are talking A-League, we are talking score review, as we always do on a Monday here on Time On. Everyone wants to have their say. Just quickly, before we get to Ben, our first caller from Ernie Ponds, the SMS is lit up as well. Lots of people want to have their say. Mason from Hawthorne's saying, have a ratings box and victory membership. League promotion and scheduling this year has been a joke. Must sort HQ issues so game can move on. Kat wants to compare to the BBL. There are only 5 games in the BBL. In the A-League, you have 13 or 14 home games. Glenn from Williamstown raising an interesting one. The swearing by Victory supporters on Friday night was embarrassing. Supporters turned on their own players. So some interesting things coming through. And Ian from St Kilda saying, A-League ticket prices are a joke. G8 tickets cost $38 for an adult, and at the recent Victory v Sydney game on Australia Day. Ian clearly not happy with the prices. Let's get to the calls. Ben and Moody Ponds, kick us off.
Score review. There's no doubt I agree with the sentiment of what you've been saying and the other callers, that the product is, the A-League is on the nose, and you know the crowds have been down and audiences, but it's been a marketer's nightmare thus far this season. Like early on in the season, you had the pinnacle, or you know, the grand final as of the World Cup qualifiers,
yep.
And then sort of later in June, you got, you know, the main sort of grand final being the actual World Cup. So, you know, it's a very, very difficult task to promote after you've got those, well, that high at the start and then the high at the end. So, like, you can't sort of be on a high throughout. And even my second point, from what Garvey was saying before about Ross McCormack, for so long there was sort of talk that he'd be off, like going back to, yep, to England, yep, once Fornaroli came back. So you're not going to sort of put all your eggs, you know, in that basket, because the basket could easily, you know, fall and collapse.
Yeah, that Ross McCormack point is a very good one. I'm not sure about your initial point, Ben, but you are in the running for the prizes that we have on offer. Stay on the line, mate. Greg's in Glen Waverley. Hello, Greg.
Score review, mate. Hey, how are you, Sam?
Good, thank you.
The ratings are the greatest con in history. I mean, I was at a luncheon a few years ago at the Nielsen's ratings speaker came out and said that, talking about the ratings, and I was living in Geelong at the time. They had 150,000 people, and after much prodding by the MC, he asked him how many books there were in Geelong with 150,000 people, and there was 4. So 4 books out of 150,000 people, and people are basing it and they're selling it on the basis of the ratings for this or the ratings for that. If you made it free to go to the soccer, you'd have to play it at Etihad every week. You'd have 60,000 people to try and compare it to the AFLW. Is like alarming, because they had 2,000 and 3,000 and 4,000 people at their games, and it's free to get in, and they had 40,000 because Collingwood were playing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Greg, I absolutely know what you're saying, and as someone that's been in this industry for a little while now, I completely agree that ratings are probably overrated, pardon the pun, but unfortunately, that is one of the few measuring sticks that we go by, and while they may not seem consistent, when you're comparing product to product at a similar time slot, it's one of the few things we can actually go by. Greg, you're in the running. Thanks for your call. Cody's in Baxter. Hello, Cody.
Hey, Sammy. How are you, mate?
Good, mate.
Score review. Yep. I mean, where do you begin, really? I mean, it's sort of just been a massive domino effect. That's just the league's been so badly affected by so many things the FA have done wrong. And I think the crowd numbers have gone down for 2 reasons.
Yep.
Crowd atmosphere has gone down. That was the most unique thing about the match day experience.
Why has that gone down, Cody?
Well, it's just the oppression of police and security. I guess they kind of cracked into the media pressure. Like, you know, the media was putting a lot of pressure on a lot of things going on outside of the game and the flares and everything. I think they've just, rather than sort of stick up for the uniqueness of the game, they sort of fell into it and completely moved it aside. Because even, it's not just Victory games. It's, you know, West Sydney are not really talked about as an atmospheric sort of team anymore. Like, you know, just it's sort of one of those things where people aren't as interested anymore. Then the second thing is that I've heard someone talk about it before. Like, the prices are ridiculous. Like, they've gone up so much this year. Like, I know that I've got family members who there. I think he said that the membership prices have gone up by a couple of hundred in just a season. I don't know why. I think, you know, if you're trying to get people to go along to games, you would make it a little bit more cheaper to go.
So are you a member, Cody?
No, I'm not at the moment. Yeah.
Because it's too expensive?
Yeah, pretty simple, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Cody, appreciate your call. You're in the running for our prize. I'm just not sure, on Cody's first point, I mean, I understand that the police presence and security presence has increased exponentially at A-League games in the last couple of years, but if we can't have a good atmosphere without flares or without, you know, people creating issues, be that of violence or something else, then I think we need to have a really good hard look at ourselves. There are plenty of sports in the world that we can't light flares, but you can have good... You can still have a very good atmosphere. But, Cody, appreciate your call. Two very quick ones before we go to a break. John is in Greensboro. Hello, John.
Yes, thanks, Sam. Look, two quick points. The competition needs a second-tier competition for two reasons. One is to create a little bit more interest in what's going on. And there's already a coming. There's clubs that can come into... There are NPL clubs that can come into the league who would get, you know, 5,000 membership right away. And the second thing would be... It would create an industry for the young fellas here who, when they get to 17 or 18 years of age and they don't make it overseas, they don't just give up football. Where if there is scope for them to play NPL and then perhaps get into an A-League squad, you will find there'll be a lot more interest and the sport will thrive. At the moment, it's become a little bit boring. But the standard of the game, I disagree with most callers and I agree with Garby, that it's actually pretty, the product is a pretty good one.
John, appreciate your call. Sorry to cut you off there, mate. We just have to be quick before we go to the break, but you are in the running for our major prizes, and you think the standard is still pretty good. Phil in Craigieburn, finish us off, Phil.
Score review. The FFA has totally stuffed up the scheduling. I live in Melbourne Barrack for the mighty Western Sydney Wanderers.
Yep.
We are the most passionate supporters of any sport in Australia. Mm-hmm. Last night's game, 7 o'clock on a Sunday night. I can't even travel to Sydney. Yep. My mates that live in Sydney don't even go to the game. FFA officials are just looking after their pockets, their jobs, and ruining it for us ordinary supporters.
Phil, I think the fixturing, and it's something that a lot of soccer fans always say to me, that Sunday 7 o'clock one, I do not understand. Phil, I think it's a really good point. Phil, if you're still on the line, do you want a family pass to AFLX, or do you want to head along to the Melbourne Victory tomorrow to take on Korea's Ulsan in the Champions League?
Melbourne Victory.
Well, you can have two passes on us, mate. Go and enjoy. Tuesday, tomorrow night, kickoff at 7:30, world-class football in Melbourne. Tickets from tickettech.com.au. We've been saying everything that's wrong with the game, but get along and support Melbourne Victory as they start their AFC campaign tomorrow night against Ulsan. Hey, I really appreciate your feedback still coming through thick and fast on the SMS. Guys, if you still want to have your say, happy to take calls. We've got a family pass to the AFLX, Etihad Stadium, this Friday to give away. We're just going to speak AFLW in a second. Paul Groves, the head coach of the Western Bulldogs AFLW side, is going to join us in a matter of moments. But before that, just recapping our A-League discussion, the texts still keep coming thick and fast on the SMS. Jimbo says... Went to my first A-League game a couple of weeks ago, Victory v Sydney, and the atmosphere was amazing, but when they started scoring, the members went feral. It actually turned me off. The members all trying to punch in with each other and people being carted out, kicking and screaming. Definitely seeing people in a different light, police standing in the aisles, separating the two team members. Well, that is pretty enlightening if that's the case. Jimbo, if you'd like to give us a call on 9429 1116, I've got a prize for you, a family pass to AFLX. Experience the unexpected Etihad Stadium this Friday, the 16th. It all kicks off at 6:40. Speaking of footy...
We know there's a history of more likely injuries occurring in women in a certain areas, and the knee injury stands out. The ACL is known for that quite well, and there's a number of theories behind that. It's the biomechanics of the shape of the women's leg, but the whole... concept of the angle between the back and the pelvis and the knee is different in women. It's just a developmental fact. And so that angle increase, where there's a greater angle at the knee developmentally, results in a different strain on the ACL. So that's certainly high up on the list. I mean, right from the very beginning of it, in professional sports, they think there's a bit difference in the prevention attitude, and particularly is that the men's sport, there's a lot of time put into preventing knee injuries with the weights coaches and the gym coaches and biomechanics coaches at women's professional level. And I'm not sure about AFLW saying they haven't done it, but because it's such an early days for the league game, they probably haven't had the pre-seasons and the prevention work that men do. And then there's a muscle strength difference in women that's just a physiological fact.
little bit of Doc Larkins there, speaking to Gary and Tim on breakfast this morning. And in lightning chat, I encourage you to get back on the podcast if you didn't catch up with it, because Doc Larkins speaks a lot about the difference between men and women and ACLs and different knee injuries. We, of course, had a horror weekend in AFLW. Brown at Davey at Carlton doing her knee, and news just through in the last couple of hours confirming the worst news for Western Bulldogs young star Isabel Huntington, who's also done an ACL. And Paul Groves, her coach, the coach of the Western Bulldogs, has been good enough to jump on the line. Paul, welcome to Time On. Appreciate you giving us a few moments. And obviously, you know, a bad day for the club with the news coming through this afternoon.
Yeah, g'day, Sam. Yeah, obviously horrific for Andy. And the confirmation that it's full ACL rupture.
Paul, what do you make about, you just heard a little bit of Doc Larkins. I know you didn't hear, you might not have heard the whole thing, but the difference in, you know, structurally between men and women and doing knee injuries, it's something that is obviously a concern, but you as a coach are powerless as to what you can do about it.
Yeah, look, we weren't truly aware of it ever since sort of 18 months ago when I took this job on, going into the first draft and looking at girls with family history or previous ACL ruptures. Going through all that certainly forms their history book a little bit in terms of drafting. But yeah, Doc's pretty much spot on with all of that. And he can add in the hormones through a menstrual cycle as well, potentially have an impact. So yeah, there's a whole heap there that contribute to a greater risk for women.
And not a whole lot Paul, you as coach, can do to prevent it.
Oh, look, we've been really strong with our prevention plans from a strength and conditioning side of things, especially this year. But they aren't professional, the girls, and they come back from VFL season where we don't have control over these girls. They go back to their VFL clubs, and we then pick them up back in November and get them ready for what is a 7-week competition.
Well, everyone here at SEN wishing Izzy the best recovery from her ACL. It's obviously news that the club didn't want. It's obviously been a very tough day for the club. We appreciate you jumping on. In better news, Paul, you're 2 from 2 this year.
Yeah, look, yesterday was, you probably saw in my interview after the game, I think it all sort of hit me at the end of it, of the enormity of what Izzy was dealing with and having coached her or had involvement with her since she was 13. It was pretty draining day, 35 degrees and everything there. Our girls really were able to block that out at halftime. We spoke about it before going in and that it's going to be a bit confronting inside and how we have to really win another half of footy that we to get a really important 4 points for what we were trying to build this season. So and then after the game, it was pretty. A lot of the girls pretty emotional because it's sort of they were able to block it out and then really give it what it deserved and the outpouring of emotion for it.
Yeah, it was a brilliant performance in the face of adversity. There's no doubt about that, Paul. But before we let you go, can I just ask you about this memo that made a lot of headlines last week? Did it actually impact any way that you coached this weekend compared to other weekends?
Yeah, it did. Brisbane traditionally sort of put another one back a lot of the time at centre bounces, so they had to. So in terms of planning for what they were going to do, it was a little bit up in the air, and we sort of had to suck it and see for the first little bit. But from our point of view, we they used a couple of examples in the memo, and it was one of our examples of our forward setup. And there was a lot of ticks on it, and it was sort of the good example from it. So we were pretty comfortable in the way we're trying to play in our game style that we sort of ticked those boxes anyway. But yeah, it did a little bit, but overall, I think to the eye, the weekend was pretty good.
Was it true, Paul, that you sat down with everyone involved with AFLW and the Chiefs in November and spoke about a lot of these things before it was actually confirmed? You know, as for want of the better term, and I know they deny this, rule changes coming in after one game in a season?
Yeah, we had a big, it was all the clubs, big round table discussion about where we're at, and it was an open discussion. It's, as they all have been with the AFL, they're very open to listening to ideas. It's been a really fruitful discussion in November, and we were pretty confident where we left it. We're all on the same page.
So it didn't come to surprise you, that memo last week?
No, I sat down. I went into AFL House last week on the Tuesday and had a really good. It was a discussion. It wasn't. It was with Steve and Nicole and Josh as well about sort of round one and where it's at. So yeah, no, it wasn't. We knew that was coming, and okay. Yeah, we acted on it, and was yeah, it's all good.
You didn't perceive it as someone trying to tell you how to coach.
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. It was it's the bigger picture of women's sport and women's footy. We are trying to put a product that is going to attract lots of young women to the sport that through the junior pathway.
Paul, I know it's been a very difficult last 36 hours for the club for a couple of different reasons, but we appreciate you jumping on. And you know, one of the great positives of the season is you're 2 from 2, and hopefully you can continue that for the rest of the year.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Much appreciated.
Paul Groves there, the head coach of the Western Bulldogs AFLW side. Terrible news with Isabel Huntington, particularly, you know, the length of these seasons are so short. Any injury like that, we wish her the best, everyone here at SEN, in her recovery, as we do that of Bree Davey as well, the Carlton star, who did her knee on the weekend too. That was a very good win by the Blues, by the way, and face adversity like the Bulldogs on Friday night and the weather, and, you know, they lost their coach to illness. It's a very good performance that I think went under the radar. Maybe it's another score review, but that time has passed. Hey, recap the headlines from the AFLX squads. This is for Thursday's matches. Nat Fyfe is playing for the Dockers. Steel Sidebottom will lead the Pies. No Scott Penderbury. Tom Hawkins is playing for the Cats. Robbie Gray, great to see him back. Jack Watts will play for Port Adelaide as well. No Ablett, no Dangerfield, no Selwood. I mentioned Penderbury's not playing, no Treloar. West Coast squad is captained by Liam Duggan, and the average games played in this squad is just 6. Fair to say, West Coast Eagles maybe not treating AFLX like some other clubs like the Saints and North Melbourne. Time on, thanks to Master Builders Training Victoria. Short course is now available. Visit mbavtraining.com.au, RTO 3935. As we go to the break, Mogul skier Brett Cox last night finishing 5th in the Moguls final. I stayed up and watched it. She spoke to KB and Doc from Pyeongchang.
The Olympics is just such an emotional event, and you know, the build-up, I'm mentally fatigued, not just from last night, but from the last couple of weeks and the whole season, really. And now it's just an amazing feeling to be able to relax. But at the same time, I'm still kind of nervous because I've got the boys on tonight. And, you know, watching them, I think I'm going to be even more nervous than I was for my event because it's out of my control. And I know what it's like to be in their position. But I just can't wait to watch them rip it. And I'll definitely be up there screaming and cheering for them for tonight's event. Well, for me, going into this event and last night in the finals in particular, my sole goal was to go for it, and I absolutely truly believe 100% that I did that in the final two rounds. So for that, I'm really proud and really excited, and you know, I went for it maybe a little too hard and was huge off the top air and wild in the middle because I was skiing so fast, so that forced me to have a few mistakes and leg splits. And I think that the girls that were on the podium last night and my teammate Jakara were very well deserving of their results, and I'm really happy for them and really proud of Jakara as well.
Look, I think the fact that they're giving coaching messages, no one's worried about that, but when you start coaching and standing in zones, I think the runners are there to give a message and get off. And I think it's great they're trying the fact that they can come on after a goal and then get straight off the ground, because, you know, 5 or 6 minutes for a runner to be out there running around telling guys where to stand in stoppages, etc., I think should be a thing of the past. And I think what it does is give the reins back to the coaches, really. Coach well during the week and let game day look after itself a little bit more, which would be great.
Spud Frawley there on the AFL trial and the restriction of runners in the JLT. Steve Hocking, by the way, to join Jared Waitley tomorrow to discuss that trial. Danny Frawley's been a long-time critic of runners being on the ground for too long. A couple more Red Time headlines before we let you go on another jam-packed edition of Time On. North Melbourne fans, the club has received council approval for a $10 million upgrade of Arden Street in time for its AFLW team to start in 2019. That is a significant development. In other footy news, St Kilda's Jack Billings has reportedly suffered a hamstring injury at their intra-club match. We'll get on to that as soon as we can. And over in the West, Ben Cousins has made his first appearance at the West Coast Eagles in club colours. The Brownlow medalist starting a part-time role. We know that was reported a few weeks ago. Well, another massive addition of Time On. Thanks for being part of Score Review. We'll do that every Monday. Stay tuned for the Sporting Capital, Jack Heron. Remember, Gary and Tim, they start at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, followed by Jared Waitley and I. It's all happening right here on the home of sport.